Hi, friends. Before we get into today's episode, we wanted to update you on a bit of hard news for our friend Kate Wieners. If you remember, we interviewed Kate on an episode of Scratch that aired June 16th. And the episode is all about this big risk that she took to go after her dream of opening this small bookshop and plant shop in her neighborhood. It's called Monstrous Books. And just last week, there was a fire in the building of Kate's bookstore, and it has caused a lot of smoke damage, water damage. So if you listened to our episode with Kate, you know that this bookshop was built with so much love and courage and grit by people who love books and plants and their community quite a bit. So Kate and her family and the whole Monstrous crew are a scrappy bunch. They are working really hard to clean everything up and reopen. And also they could use some help in the meantime. So one of the tangible ways that we can really rally around them right now as they are doing this work to reopen is purchasing gift cards. So we'll link their website in the show notes, and you'll see right there on the front page is just an option to purchase a gift card. And even for folks who aren't local, when they are up and running again, which they are very much dedicated to doing, they do ship anywhere in the U.S. So that's an option for people who aren't just local to Kansas City. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Now on to the episode.
What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either. Say scratch that again.
Scratch that again.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode. And also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friend.
Happy Monday.
Here we are.
Today we're talking about one of my favorite things, which is creating a magic moment. This came up around Charlie's birthday, I think is actually how we had the idea for this. His fifth birthday is coming up, and I'm thinking and overthinking a lot about traditions I want to form, how I want to mark a moment. I've also been secretly helping plan my own baby shower, which is not actually a baby shower.
I can't wait. It's going to be so fun.
It's going to be so fun. I hope it better be. But thinking about like what I want that to be and why, and not just being like a baby shower because everyone has a baby shower. So yeah, we want to talk about how we're making these, what we're wanting to retain from our childhood. I have a lot of things to share about the way my mom made stuff super magical as a child. Things that feel really hard about this. I feel way more equipped to do this in adult spaces and in kid spaces. I feel very...
get a lot of pressure.
Inadequate, apprehensive pressure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just like ill-equipped, like, ah, I don't know how to do it. And then some of the things that we want to do, but maybe haven't or aren't yet. And then some resources that feel important to us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's a lot of pressure around, I don't know, like kid birthday parties and Pinterest, and it can feel really bad really fast. And so thinking about being a little bit more intentional and thoughtful and paying attention to this big scary pressure and how to maybe like move through that or around it in a scrappy, our favorite word, scrappy way. So what were the things about like when you think about a moment or a memory or an embodied experience from childhood, what are some of the things that stand out to you?
This was one place where my mom just excelled. And she really excelled at the intention behind creating a moment. Like our birthdays felt really, really special, not because we had lavish parties or any money or got big presents, but it was just like you felt so special. And it was like a week of celebrating, and you'd have a friend party and then a family party. and you chose what you wanted to eat and what the theme was. And we would hang like paper chains everywhere. This was way pre-Pinterest. I mean, I need to look up some photos from my birthdays because I wonder what the actual image is compared to my memory of it. I remember one year I had like a Molly themed birthday, like the American Girl doll.
Oh my gosh. How did she pull that off without like spending all the money? What did she do?
Well, because we ate food that like Molly would have. We had the American Girl doll cookbook. I saved up and got the Molly doll. So I had the doll already that I saved for like years for. And we played like, I'm trying to remember, we played Pin the Tail on the Donkey. Everyone dressed up in that style. I think there was a lot of like themed dressing. The food was always really important. And then the decorations. And for decorations, we like used whatever we had. We didn't go buy decorations.
I would have died to go to a Molly themed party.
Oh, yeah. It was good. It was good. And so the birthdays are a really big like memory for me. And I think I feel a lot of panic and terror around creating a perfect enough birthday, which is overwhelming to me. But she also did these other little things like we were not a family that had candy or sugar like at all or ever. But she would buy lemon drops and she had a jar of lemon drops in the pantry and we all could have one on rainy days.
Where did she get that idea?
I have no idea. I don't know.
I love that so much.
And then she has always, I mean, as long as I can remember and still to this day, she has a drawer in the kitchen that is designated for themed napkins and paper plates that she like buys on clearance. And then no matter what you need a themed napkin for, it is there.
I literally think my mom has the same drawer.
That, you know, it's so interesting because they were like pre-Pinterest moms.
Well, and I think part of it is like saving everything. So like if you ever buy them for anything and you have like three leftovers, you're keeping those. And that's where they go into the drawer. And then it's ready 10 years later.
We would have the first day of snow party. Have I told you about this?
No.
The first snow of the year, which my mom was like obsessed with snow. And we were homeschooled. So it was like the first day that it snowed, everything, we would eat white food and we would get our snowflake plates and napkins out. That's all it was. But it was the intention. It was the paying attention. It was the noticing, the pausing to notice and then marking.
With like an embodied experience that is different than an ordinary day.
Yes.
A burst of sugary lemon.
We also, did you ever read the Patricia Polacco book, Thunder Cake?
No.
Oh my God. Is Otto scared of storms at all?
Not yet.
It's a picture book, a beautiful, beautifully illustrated book by Patricia Polacco. And so it's about this little girl and she's scared of the thunder. And her grandma is like, we're making thunder cake. And so that she learns how to count between the thunder and the lightning to know how far away the storm is. And then through the whole story, they're gathering all these supplies. And then once the storm, so the goal is to gather all the supplies and make the cake before the storm arrives. And then you eat the cake while it's storming. And then in the back of the book, there's a recipe. And I was talking to my sister today about it as I was getting ready for this episode. And she was like, yeah, and we made the cake. I don't really remember actually making the cake, but I'm sure we did. But that book kind of embodies this energy of like transforming something like this scary moment and taking ownership of it and holding it and being like, okay, on days when it thunders or storms, we make thunder cake, which is kind of like the lemon drop on a rainy day.
And it's like reacting to something that's totally out of your control, but taking a certain control and saying, we're going to make it about this. Oh, I love thunder cake.
Charlie, I just introduced to him the idea of making like name cards for people at the table. My mom like would really involve us in like setting the table for special occasions or just like a random day. And he got everyone a sticky note in our favorite color and he put them by our plates so that we could each label our own. And I gave him napkins to put around and it was so sweet seeing him be excited for something that was really exciting to me as a kid, which was like getting to make the, we'd usually use 3x5 cards and just fold them in half and then write people's names on it.
But it's like the joy of being host. And I think also like paying attention to like little details. I think, okay, we're going to talk more about this book, The Power of Moments by Chip Heath and Dan Heath. But like one of the things they talk about in that book is like elevating a moment and how if you like pay attention to the sensory details, you can sort of bring something that is mundane and ordinary into something that is elevated and kind of creates a different kind of container around it. And I think it sounds like my mom did some of the similar moves to your mom. And I think like setting a place is, or like, oh man, even now she hosts so many tea parties and it's just like getting out the teapot, putting on fancy classical music and lighting a candle. And then that is sort of like a whole, like somehow you're transported into a different world, a different space. But the other thing I like about this is that, I mean, you talked about how your mom created these birthday moments, but it's also like elevating ordinary things. And I think that like paying attention to that might be one way of wiggling through the pressure that we feel to make like these like birthdays really huge and maybe sidestepping that and doing other little moves that actually don't have to be like super expensive and extravagant, but like just a tiny little special thing. I don't know, that's feeling a little bit more possible to me. The things that I think of as like moments, we, for our birthdays, my mom would always make us Swedish pancakes, which are pretty much just very similar to crepes. If you're, so like flat, skinny little pancake, she would put powdered sugar on them and roll them up. And then they would bring us breakfast in bed. So, you know, all of my five older siblings would get in bed and they'd sing and there'd be a candle and you'd eat Swedish pancakes and like maybe like a little birthday present. And then another thing we would do on our birthdays is that everyone would go around the table and say what they appreciate about you. And as a kid, I don't really like this as an adult anymore, but as a kid, it was very special. And I think like a really good practice for all the siblings to be paying attention to and figuring out what is something I love about this person in my family. Another thing that feels like it was a really defining kind of moment for us was my dad would take us grocery shopping every Saturday morning and we would get 25 cents to pick out whatever treat we wanted, which was a big deal because we didn't ever do that. And my brother even one year saved up for a month and got a box of Twinkies that were a dollar at Aldi. And he kept them in hidden away and, you know, would eat his fancy Twinkies. But we would get like, it was like 17 cents for a can of pop, off-brand pop, or like a gumball from the machine or something. But that was like a big deal to us. We did that every Saturday. Another thing that stands out to me is these are a lot of things that my dad did. But my dad would make breakfast for all of us every morning. But he would do like a different breakfast every day of the week. So it'd be like cream of wheat and scrambled eggs. And I remember, I think it was Thursdays, he would make, do you know what malto meal is?
I love malto
like meal. Like chocolate malto meal. And he would do a smiley face with marshmallows in them. That I was pretty little when he did that. And I'm almost 40. And I very much remember. I'm trying to think like what I could do for Otto now. I would be the age that Otto is now, like 5 years old. That he would still remember like a kind of breakfast I would make him. But it was like the little marshmallows and the smiley face. And then I also have a very, very strong memory of my first day of kindergarten. So I'm the youngest of all six kids. So my first day of kindergarten was like a distinct day for my mom because it was the first time that like all of her kids were in school. I think my sister Laura must have been in high school. And my mom got a ball of string for every one of us. And while we were at school, she made like this maze around our whole house And so we each were like given the end of a string, and then we like followed that string around our whole house and into the backyard and around the house. And then at the end of it was a chocolate Hershey bar. Like as a family also that never got candy. It was like, what?
Big deal.
It was a big deal. She only did it once. I very distinctly remember it. I did it for Otto last year on his first day of preschool at his new school. We did it last year and it was, I was surprised by how much it meant to him. But I think it's like, yeah, it's like a ball of string. And I think we did a cupcake. So it's like very simple, but like creating the experience of that and almost like the drama of the moment was much more exciting than just like, I brought you a cupcake. I don't know. It just, it took like an extra 20 minutes or whatever. But those are some of the things I remember. And I think part of what's interesting to me about it is that so much of it is like these ordinary, you don't have to add the flourish of a smiley face, or you don't have to add balls of string to the, like the first day of school, you know, like these kind of ordinary things, simple things that actually I still think of so much longer with like a lot of fondness, that stand out amongst the blur of like all the other days, all the other moments. There's some that like somehow plant in your brain differently and last and stick.
I'm thinking about how, what a big role paper chains have played in my life, and that those were born from my mom making special moments and from a really tiny budget. Like, we always had paper in the house and staples, you know, like there was, we would do like countdowns to our birthdays. And just that was like one of our go-to decoration moments. For our wedding, my mom made like, I don't even know, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of feet of paper chains to hang in the rafters. I'll post a photo of this, because it's pretty epic. In the rafters of my uncle's barn where we had our reception. Like, she worked for months making these chains. And it just felt so special because, and like for Charlie, when I was pregnant, at the end of the pregnancy, I made myself a countdown paper chain and I wrote each day. And then I like saved the chain that was the one that he was born on. But just how something so tiny can stick, and this like intention, like the, you don't have to pause for a smiley face. Like, your mom could have just had a Hershey bar laying out for each of you and that would be fine and sweet. But it was like that she made it into an activity for you.
And not all the time either. I mean, I think like as I'm listening to this, I'm like, how many people have time to take a ball of yarn through? Like, my mom didn't work.
Same. My mom didn't work either.
A lot of other parents are not going to have time to take a ball of yarn, let alone six balls of yarn through a house. So I think it's like finding or taking advantage of a space or a pocket when you have it. I don't know that like that's something you could usually do. And that's part of what makes it special, is like it doesn't happen all the time. It's rare. It's elevated. It's different from all the other days.
But I think marking these things as like doable, affordable moments versus these like huge, lavish, like once or twice a year things thrown, I think that's what I want to retain, is that these get sprinkled throughout. Like, so whoever goes to the grocery store, then you come back and we do show and tell, and it's like a thing, which just makes like unloading groceries fun. And it was a way, Andrew and I used to, like when we first started dating, like grocery shopping together was like a date. And we always, it was like one of the only things that we like always did together. And then after having Charlie, it's just like, we don't grocery shop together. Like, that's one of us is like, please God, let me go do it alone. Or we're like running, you know, Andrew's running to the grocery store on his way home from work. It's not an activity anymore. And so that's where show and tell was born, because then you can like show all the stuff that you bought. But I think those are the things that make this like a mundane everyday occurrence feel magical. And like the gratitude, I think part of this is about a gratitude practice, being like, oh my God, we have milk. Like, how delightful. Because we're like, and milk. But it does make you pause and be like, oh my God, we have milk. We have like crackers. And Charlie would be like, oh, thank you for getting me my favorite hummus. Or, you know, it is, I think, instilling like a sense of gratitude. And that these moments, like, it's small. And also, like, a lot of people don't have food. Like, going to the grocery store and relatively, like, without much anxiety, getting to feed your family, like, what a fucking gift. Like, that should be celebrated. Like, we should all be freaking out that I just get to go to the store and buy my kid milk whenever we run out. What a delight. And I think this, like, paying attention to moments, I think it's a really great way to start a gratitude practice.
Yeah, I think around food, and I think modeling that for Charlie too. Like, when you're a kid, like, the idea that there are people that don't have access to these things, or that this is actually not just a given. How do you teach that
without it being like starving children in Africa eat? You have to finish your plate. It's like, okay, that makes no sense at all.
Yeah, exactly. Something that feels present and real and close to the life you're actually living. And I don't know.
And instead of it being soaked in shame, it being soaked in praise for what you have, joy, and being like, to appreciate the simplicity, like to feel really happy and excited, to get an endorphin rush from filling your fridge up with food.
Yeah. And notice that it's even happening. As opposed to just like, oh, there's always food in our fridge.
Yeah.
This is kind of hopping a little bit back. But like, if these are the things that we remember a lot from childhood, and then you kind of mentioned like once Charlie was here, like some of like the strain of things shifting around, like things you used to do together, like grocery shopping as a date. What are the things, if you have any, that make it feel tricky, intimidating, impossible, hard to create moments, small or large, now? Do you feel that strain?
I feel it around birthday parties. This is the first year that I am planning. Last year, I just like told Andrew's mom, I was like, I'm freaking out. I can't do this. Like, you're in charge. Just like throw a birthday party. And she did. She made a really happy, delightful party. And this year I was like, I'm doing it. I'm going to plan it. Birthdays feel really overwhelming to me. It feels like so much pressure to create it for him. And I can't quite figure out what it is. I threw like a really magical 30th birthday for my friend last year. I threw a huge 10-year anniversary party for me and Andrew. I'm planning my own like brunch, morning garden party, brunch, baby shower moment in collaboration with a lot of people who are doing most of the work, but I'm like got to ideate most of it. So it's confusing to me because I love creating moment, building a workshop and like curating every little experience and interaction that the people will have.
Yeah. What do you think it is?
I don't know if it's that I'm like, will it be as good as what my mom has done? Will I set the bar too high? Part of it is this, like, I think I, in a way, I feel embarrassed to be putting that much time and intention into a birthday party for my kid because it's like Pinterest mom. Mm. When I'm using the exact same fucking skills when I throw these other things. And Charlie's like the most important person to me. Like, I want to make this magical thing for him, but somehow it feels derogatory in some way.
Does it feel like it feels too like traditional capital M, like momming?
Yeah, I think maybe that's what it is. Ugh, which feels icky even saying it because then I'm like, well, that's so dumb.
Well, it can be one part of it. It doesn't mean that it's the whole thing. I think the other thing is you said, like, am I going to set the bar too high is very real.
Or will it be too low? Will he be disappointed? We just yesterday attended a birthday party from my friend who's like, they're not like, wasn't one of those like crazy rich parties. It was just like so fucking intentional. It was this like sensory play party. So she had her whole backyard. She like pulled out the like play kitchens and all the little play food and toys. She had tons of bottles of shaving cream. She made noodles and just like let the kids play with noodles. She had like bird seed in the sensory bin. She had flour, just straight flour, for the kids to like mix with water and play with. It was absurd. It was so messy. I'll share some photos.
How old was the birthday kid?
4. Her favorite thing is to play kitchen. So the whole thing was built around like playing kitchen and getting incredibly messy. And then my friend had like a blow up pool that the kids all like, we threw the kids in to like get the shaving cream and flour off of them.
That is so fun.
Yeah. I have to send you the photos. Charlie's like manically bouncing around a trampoline that is covered in shaving cream. Like the kids, thankfully, there was like this like raging downpour just as we were going to go inside for cake. And so like everything got cleaned up and I was like, wow.
Well played.
But it's just like everything. She had a little peanut butter and jelly bar, which was just, she had like 3 types of bread and some frozen waffles out. And then like peanut butter, almond butter, a jelly, some fluff, marshmallow fluff, maybe honey or something. And then cookie cutters. So you could cut the shape of your
fun
peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know, like, so that was not super costly. Probably stuff that they're just going to put it in their fridge and like eat it over the next week or so. Yeah. So just so much intention and so focused on the kids, like exactly what the kids.
Do you feel like any part of, I don't know if this is in your brain or if how other people think about it, but it also makes me wonder if like part of the difficulty of planning a kid's party is thinking about how other parents will feel about it or think about it. Is that in your brain at all? Because I'm thinking like, that sounds like a dream birthday party to me. I don't know if all the parents in my life would love it.
Oh, there was a group of parents that were not
into it.
There was some grumbling, it was very interesting to sit near a certain group of parents at the party. Yeah, she did. And she did not give a fuck. She made this party for her kid and all the kids had the best time. It was so good. And there was no one was being like, oh, don't touch, be careful with that or whatever. Cause it was, she had set it up that like the only rule was she has this like little built a little like pond for herself in the backyard. And she was like, none of the sensory stuff goes in my pond. But other than that, it was like shaving cream and birdseed on the trampoline. Great. Like, want to put flour and water paste all over yourself? Perfect. So the only rule was like, it doesn't go into my little like handmade pond thing.
Part of my growing anxiety as Otto gets older around birthdays is also just like bringing people to my home.
Oh my God. I have so much anxiety about that. I've not done that.
Every birthday except Otto's first birthday, we've done at our home, but it's only been family and like really close family friends. And he's getting to the age where he wants to invite people from school. And I'm just like, I don't know how I'm going to, I got to do some therapy before I can do that. Like, I also love thinking of that mom as like bringing people into your home is a whole other vulnerability. I think what I'm noticing about myself in terms of what makes this hard for me, I just like talking about it just now, I feel like part of how I have been operating is very much on brand for Rebecca, which is like all or nothing, very much all or nothing. And so I think that since Otto has been born, I'm not sure that we've done hardly anything to celebrate any of our anniversaries, any like Micah, like our dating anniversary, wedding anniversary. We've done very little to celebrate our birthdays, but I throw like a huge party for Otto for all of his birthdays. And like, it is incredibly stressful for me. I remember on his second birthday, the first time we hosted it in our home, I like pulled Mike, I like dragged Micah into the kitchen and I looked at him with wild eyes and I said, I am in hell. And also, I love it. It makes me so happy. We start planning this party like 2 months before. Otto picks whatever the theme is. So for like 2 years, we did Halloween in May. This last year we did Panda. He helps me make all the invitations. We address them and put them in the mailbox. We look, literally go to Pinterest and we pick out all the foods we want to make. all the decorations. Like for his birthday, one of his Halloween birthdays, he wanted to, it was very deep Halloween. And we ordered like these pretend blood bags and we put Hawaiian punch in them. And that was like the drinks that people drank. Like it was like all out. And I like make a cake and I decorate it like a total like Pinterest, traditional Pinterest mom vibe. And it's so fun for me and I love it so much. But it's like I have this thing in my head that like if we're not doing that, I can't even begin to think of how to mark something meaningfully. And that's, I think, part of why I like what we're talking about today is trying to think about other ways of marking and smaller things and marking meaningful moments that aren't don't have to be like 2 months of planning. That in-between space is not my sweet forte.
Yeah, I think I am pretty good at like creating tiny, tiny moments or like really big ones. The big ones, though, as we're talking, I was thinking about what made the other moments different. And I am noticing that they were deeply collaborative.
Mm.
Like I threw, like even the anniversary party, which was a surprise for Andrew, I had friends who were like, we were collaborating really closely on it, who are, I was knocking ideas around. And I think somehow with Charlie's birthdays, I mean, I have Andrew that I could collaborate with on, but we're just not always the best collaborators in that way.
What do you think it would be like to make Charlie more of a collaborator in it?
Well, it sounds like that's what you've done with Otto. I really haven't done that with him yet, which is interesting because I do want to collaborate with him. I think sometimes I'm a little bit of a control freak and I want it to be how I want it to be. This thing that Charlie says, he's like, I want to do what I want to do. I want to be what I am going to be.
Like, I love that, Charlie.
Okay, dude. It's usually at moments when I'm asking him to do something distinctly different. But I feel that. I'm like, I want to do what I want to do, and I don't want to compromise. Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
Okay, so should we?
Yes. Do you mean pivoting to the books?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know The Power of Moments, Chip and Dan Heath. I found from the A Beautiful Mess podcast that Emma and Elsie run, the sisters, and it transformed how I think about setting up my classroom, how I think about parenting. I don't know if I think I read it after I had Charlie, but it really made me think about how I want to create a moment for Charlie. And the thing that I have taken away from that book, the most important thing I took away from it, I think, is that it doesn't have to be big, but it has to be intentional. And it needs to disrupt. Like, they have a story in there about a hotel that's like mid by all accounts, but it's like one of the highest ranked hotels for families. I don't remember where it is, at California or something. And at the pool, there's a red telephone and you can pick the phone up at any time and order whatever flavor popsicle you want. And it will then be brought to you. And that one thing, which probably cost them like very minimal money and relatively minimal effort, is like what put this place on the map. And that is the kind of world that I want to build. Like, I want to be putting red telephones wherever I can where people can call for a popsicle, where it's just this like pop of delight, which there's so many other things about the book. But
I think it is in California because it's in specific contrast to like all of these like 5-star extravagant, like all the amenities and all the fanciness. And this is like a kind of a little dinky spot. And I think that the Google reviews are like
off the charts. It's just like thousands of people have commented on it. And it seems like part of it, part of the code that they talk about in this book is like, I think the language they use is breaking the script, which really works for us, is like there's a script of what we expect. And if there's anything that can break from that and create novelty, it literally like gets banked in your memory differently than all of the other things that abide by your script. In a way that's even more powerful, I think, than, and this is another thing that I took from the book, is like that your energy is better spent in so many different parts. Like, I think in parenting, but also in teaching and like customer service and like how you run a business, your energy is like quantifiably better spent by trying to highlight the peak experiences as opposed to fixating on remedying or like fixing everyday pits. So like people are going to complain about things. That's going to happen. There's going to be the mundane, like this wasn't what I expected or wanted, and grumble, grumble, grumble. But if you can like really highlight on creating peak experiences, that especially ones that break the script, then that's the thing that becomes the memorable thing. And a lot of things that we do instinctively as humans is work really, really hard to erase the negative experiences so that there are never any grumbles or there are never any nothing for you to complain about, as opposed to like, just let that go. What are the things, what's the red phone and popsicles thing we want to add here?
Yeah, it's like an interruption or a disruption of like status quo, that what you expected just... we just coast along so much, and like we need something to shake us out of that, like all of the things blurring together.
Yeah, the book is really cool in that it like gathers all of the, they have a lot of like studies where they look at how memory works, and they'll even, I remember one of the studies they even had was like, it was called, they dubbed it like the nostalgia effect, where it's like, it was something like 80% of the college memories that people had decades later were from September, were from the month of September, because it's the, everything was new and it's the novelty. And a lot of things are like ritualized at the beginning of the school year or the end of a school year. Like you mark time differently and that makes it more memorable.
This feels really important to call out, because I think we have another episode coming up where we're going to talk about like documenting our lives, but I think I cling to wanting to create moments because so much of memory for me can and has been a blur. I've spent a lot of time disassociated or coping or whatever, hashtag trauma, which is like boring. We've been there, talked about it. But the way that I remember stuff, the older I get, the more I'm like, my memory is so...
Yes.
It is unreliable, not in that I can't remember something, like I don't have memory loss, but there are just whole chunks that like kind of disappear or morph. And so I think a lot about how I curate my documentation, how I'm documenting things, and also how I'm disrupting this flow so that then there is something to hold on to.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And a lot of that is through repetition.
Mm.
Which is kind of talking about how like, oh, we did this thing on the same day. Like I always had a lemon drop on a rainy day. So some of it I think is repetition, and some of it is like calling out a big moment. Like I'm not going to forget our 10-year anniversary because I threw such a big bash and it was like a whole moment.
Yeah. And that it was like marking the 10-year, but it was also a prompt to reflect on the 10 years up to that point. It's like creating... it's marking the moment. I think one of the quotes that I loved from the book, The Power of Moments, this is what we mean by thinking in moments, to recognize the pros of life need punctuation. So it's like creating the punctuation around these moments. It's marking them. It's putting them on the map because of the way the brain works and memory works. And like, I want to remember I was here. I want to remember this happened. And I think for our kids, part of the beauty of that or the power or usefulness of that is that it also, I think, helps create a sense of self and identity of like who I am. It like creates containers around reflection. And so much of it also that I think is useful for me and the way my brain works is being intentional to mark those moments embodied, like creating the sensory container around it. Like you're present, your body is present in that. Because there's also this section in the book. Now I'm just raving about the book, but there's also a section in the book where he talks about how like we think that we get insights about ourselves by like reflecting in our brains, which is like 98% of my life is just reflecting in my brain. And he's like, most of the insight that we get in our lives is through embodied experience. And so finding ways to embody our lives and be present physically and intentionally in our lives is like part of that work.
Well, that's like the where he talks about the sensory experience. Like I keep coming back to the lemon drop, but it's like that there is nothing like the lemon flavor bursting in your mouth or the smell. Like my mom would always have when we come home, like classical music is playing and she has a candle lit. Like it sounds a certain way. It smells a certain way. Like she has set the stage for us to enter. And all it took was for her to push a button on her CD player and light a candle. But it brings all our senses into it.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So I wrote down a few things that very tiny things that I'm thinking about for like how I want to do this work of marking moments. Okay. First of all, one of the frameworks in the book is they talk about marking transitions, milestones, and pits. And I am thinking about wanting, as someone who is like an all or nothing and like, okay, my kid's birthday party is huge, but everything else is nothing. How to like kind of elevate these tiny things. And one thing that I want to celebrate and I'm going to, we'll check in later. Okay. This is very, very dorky. Are you ready? I definitely inherited this from my dad, which is like being pretty obsessive about debt and money stuff. I'm like, really obsessed with our mortgage payments, and I have been tracking our interest payments and our principal payments, okay? And we just crossed the line where our principal payment, which is like the actual money we're paying off on our house, is just like 30 cents higher than our interest payment.
That is exciting.
Thank you. I have been watching this and just being like wheeling it over the line. I want to plan something to mark that it happened. And I want us to remember that it happened and celebrate the significance of it happening. I don't know how we're going to do it yet, but it's going to be intentional. Okay. And then so transitions, milestones, and pits. That's the one. So these are like different things to pay attention to and how to mark. One thing that I have done in the past that I want to keep doing, and I want to think about how to do it with auto, is plants and getting having a plant be a marker of a beginning or an end. Or like my sister, I remember the very first apartment I lived in by myself, my sister got me this philodendron. And I remember like the vines on it, like growing around my door frame and my bookshelves and like the life of that sort of marking your life in a sort of way, showing a passage of time in a sort of way. So that's one thing. I also am really excited about writing letters. I would like to be more intentional to write letters to Otto for maybe Micah too, for like marking specific transitions, milestones, and pits. But I'm also thinking about creating a family ritual around writing letters to our future selves, and how we could sort of start to document or reflect or gain POV through writing letters to ourselves and having like a spot where I keep, if Otto, 5-year-old Otto, because he's also really getting into writing, it's really fun. If he could write a letter to him, his 6-year-old self, his 10-year-old self, his 18-year-old self, you know, like how many letters could we gather and then have that be a practice of reflecting and passing time and marking time? And then the other thing I'm thinking about with marking these things in time is the importance of bringing other people in to bear witness to that thing. I think that's maybe part of what is significant about the childhood memory of like what we appreciate about you is just having other people bear witness to it sort of automatically creates a certain sort of elevation of that moment, adding to the significance of that moment. And like Otto recently got his passport, and I did not realize how big of a deal that was going to be to him. And right after we got the passport, we went to have a play time with some of his cousins at my parents' house. And when they arrived, Otto gathered everybody into the living room and had them sit on the couch. And he was like, "I have an announcement. I just got my passport." And they cheered for him. And people, yes,
that's a big deal.
Yes. I think it's that idea. So I think it's twofold. There is paying attention to the things that we would just sort of check off the list of okay, we got the passport, blah, 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 blah. But bringing in an audience to bear witness to a moment, I think is significant. And I have a lot of reasons why that's hard for me. I don't want to bring people into my home, for example, too self-conscious. And I think feeling you're asking something of other people as opposed to bringing them into a celebration is a different framework for me. And then the last thing is just thinking about the embodied way of elevating a moment, whether that's candles, music, dressing up. It's not something we do very often, but marking something by elevating it by we're wearing different clothes for this occasion. So those are some of the little things that I'm thinking about as I keep trying to think through how to do this and for myself and for my kid.
I love the bringing people in, which makes me think of the other book that we've been talking about, which is The Art of Gathering by Priya Parker. The thing that I took away from her book is that, the main thing I took away is that the thing is for everyone, it's for no one, which is kind of an interesting concept in when I'm thinking about wanting everyone to be welcome for spaces. But realizing that actually curating it down. But she talks about drilling down and down and down into why you're doing something, which makes me think of this non-baby baby shower that I'm so unreasonably excited for. It's because I was I don't want to just open presents and smell candy bars melted into diapers. You know, there's all these
That's what I was going to get you. That was my present for you.
Oh, my God. But I was like, what do I want to celebrate the people that are in our world. I want the people that I'm hoping will support us to feel acknowledged and for them to feel like they have some ownership and stake in this. I want to celebrate and own this joy that I feel for bringing another person in the world and also the terror that exists there. I want to throw the most badass, coolest party underneath it. The core value is that I don't want people to think I'm boring now that I have two kids, if we're being really, really honest. So I was we're going to have a DJ and we're going to have a flash tattoo artist and anybody can get a tattoo at my baby shower that wants to. And so if we're just being really honest, I want to throw a baby brunch moment that says, I am still fucking cool as hell. That's the value.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. But it comes down to this really getting honest and down and down and down. It's not just because culturally we throw a party so people can give you diapers and clothes. It's great, great. Yes. I'm still doing some of the normal things, but that doesn't really feel like the point of the gathering. And another piece of it feels like Charlie being acknowledged as this transition, as he is becoming a sibling, the deep implication that has for him. Anyways, I'm starting to ramble around, but I think that these moments like a wedding, an anniversary, a baby shower can feel so you just show up and you go through the motion.
Yes.
And it's why are we throwing this moment? Is it just to get gifts? We could do that without a party.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's making me think it's twofold. Part of what the prompt here is. And one is the moments that are expected to mean something and the templates we've inherited for those and questioning the templates and creating the marking that moment in the way that actually resonates with the value it has to us, right? And then the other is these moments that we tend to skip over and gloss over and finding ways to actually honor them in a way that feels good to us. It's like, I think about for like a wedding, there's so many parts of that script that we have been given to regurgitate, you know, and to just sort of like mindlessly repeat. And I think so much about Emma, your friend Emma that we had on in an earlier episode, and like the image of they like exchanged their vows in the bathtub together, because that reflected like them in a really distinct way, and it matched what they were doing and how they wanted to package that moment. I mean, it's like the big things can take any shape. We can make the tiny things significant. We can place them on the map, and it's an invitation to do that in tiny ways and big ways.
Yeah, to do it on purpose. So like little moments, find the things that you want to pull out, the show and tell after the grocery store, as a gratitude practice, as a way to reinvent what used to feel really special, which was grocery shopping together. Yeah, that feels like it feels really purposeful and intentional. And then on the big stage where it's like, oh, this is the thing that everyone does, to pause and be like, okay, why do we always, there's a quote in The Art of Gathering which says, take the reason you think you're gathering because it's our departmental Monday morning meeting, or because it's the family tradition to barbecue at Lake, and keep drilling below them. Ask why you're doing it. And every time you get another deeper reason, ask why again. Keep going until you hit a belief or value. It's the intention. It's the purpose. It's the like being rooted in a value.
Being present, being fully full bodied, full hearted present for it. So our prompt invitation homework is what? Maybe find like a teeny tiny thing to celebrate or mark. It doesn't even have to be celebrate. It can also be like a heartbreak. It can be marking this moment on the map, and whatever that little transition is, or that little pit or milestone or transition, and finding a way to honor it for what it is, embody it, mark it, remember it.
Someone commented once on something I posted on Instagram, and I have no idea if they meant it positively or negatively, and it is irrelevant to me, but they're like, oh, you're really romanticizing your life. And I was like, damn right, 100%. There's two phrases that I hold on to for these little moments. And one is like romanticizing your light. And that's how I feel when I'm like run to grab my phone to take a picture, because the way the light is falling through against my plants, and now that's casting a shadow on the art on my wall. And then the other one is like memorializing your life while you're alive. And I've talked about this so many times, but we went through this period where there was like three deaths, like in quick succession in Andrew's family. And something about the beauty of the way that we came together to celebrate them made me like crave that all of the time. To be memorializing, to be celebrating and telling the people all these beautiful, kind things.
Yeah, while they're alive.
Drop and run. Like if someone had died, I would drop everything and run to them. And to do that as much for the like happy or like simple moments as much as I would for like the grave, like deep grief. And that's what I feel like memorializing your life while you're alive is. So I wonder if people could... I wonder if an invitation could be taking those two phrases, and what does that mean to you? Like, what does it mean to romanticize your life, and what does it mean to memorialize your life or those of others around you?
Yeah. To give an example of marking like something that is not just celebrating a positive, in the book that they talk about is like the woman who lost her husband. Do you remember this example? She love of her life died, and he passed away a while ago, but she was like having a hard time moving on or like continuing her life or dating again. And they did like a ceremony for her that was like similar to the wedding ceremony, but like honoring the end. And they did like a whole ceremony with her ring around that. And that stood out to me as well of like, I think both of these things are important. In like being present for your life and memorializing your life and celebrating while you're here, is like marking, not just marking only the joyful moments, but like finding a specific way to mark the painful and the grief and the not what I would have expected or wanted or not what I would have planned for things too. There are certain ways that we do that for certain periods of time, specifically around like death, but before death and outside of death, there's lots of grief. And I think finding ways to mark that is important too. Okay, that was fun.
Also, go read these books. They're great.
Yeah, we'll link both of them in the Patreon. Thanks for being here with us.
Love ya.
Bye-bye. Bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
Bye.
This podcast is edited and perfected by the most beautiful wizard and my favorite dude, Micah Jones.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.